We're going to now turn it over to Sarah. And Sarah, I wanted to ask if you could tell us a bit about some of the major challenges that the Hewlett Foundation is focusing on, and where you think that some progress is being made. So Sarah, over to you.
Thank you so much, Sebastian. And thank you, Catherine, for providing the overview of the Gates Foundation model. I think that's a really good starting point for this discussion. And I wanted to also thank the audience for being here with us. So I'm going to start my remarks from the outset by saying I've been at the Hewlett Foundation for about 6 months working on women's economic empowerment. But prior to that, I was at the World Bank working on the same issue for about 12 years. So I can give a little bit of both perspectives in what I'm going to say. And at Hewlett Foundation, this is the Women's Economic Empowerment Strategy is also our newest strategy. It's only about 5 years old, but it builds on the work that the Hewlett Foundation has been doing over 50 years on women's health and human rights. And the idea was really to focus on another element of empowerment, specifically on economic outcomes. And as we'll see in this conversation here today, women live their lives holistically. It's not only about economic ends, but we need to think about all of the different elements of empowerment. That being said, women's economic empowerment is a fairly nascent field. I remember when we first, when I first started working on this at the World Bank, this was not an issue area that got a lot of attention. The attention has really increased, I would say, over the last 5-6 years. And at Hewlett Foundation, our approach focuses on the building blocks of women's economic empowerment. We have a very sort of macro policy approach, and the idea is you need to build the foundation for this work. And the way that we see the foundational aspects are on gender data, gender disaggregated data, sort of research and advocacy specifically on these issues. And I'll go into each of them in a bit. The idea behind having better gender disaggregated data is just so that women's working lives can be visible. And so we had the video from Sushila Devi in the beginning of this presentation, and I think that's a perfect example. She works in the informal sector. She wouldn't be counted in economic statistics like labor force participation. But of course, the work that she does is important. It's productive. She should be reflected in the statistics. So what we do is we really sort of work on methods to improve gender disaggregated data to make sure that women are not invisible. And they sort of tend to be invisible in these statistics because they disproportionately work in the informal sector, because they spent a disproportionate amount of time on care activities, childcare, elder care, work in the household. That is all activities that should be counted as productive activities, but just are invisible. And because they're invisible, sort of policymakers really don't consider them when they make policy. And I just want to bring up a really interesting example, sort of that's not from the development space, but I think it makes a lot of sense. And that example is on sort of crash test dummies. So I'm reading this great book, Invisible Women by Caroline Perez, and I will sort of call it out because crash test dummies are based on the average weight and size of an American male. And, you know, I'm not as tall, I don't weigh as much as an American male, but the seatbelt that is designed for a man. And what that means is when I push the seat up in my car, when they're looking at airbags, that's not designed for my body type. And actually that leads to greater injury of women in car crashes and actually an increased rate of death of 17% of women. Well, sort of women's body types are different than men's body types. It's just not reflected in the data because women are considered to be smaller men. And I'm using this as a metaphor for the development space as well. Women tend to have different lived realities than men. They tend to go in and out of the labor market. They work in the informal sector. They have different responsibilities, and that really needs to be considered in policymaking. If we're not in the data, that's just a foundational building block that's not there. The second area that we really work on is research. because, again, research needs to reflect women's lived realities. And ultimately, economic models tend to ignore the gender drivers of employment, of entrepreneurship, of financial inclusion. If we're not included in the models, the research really doesn't show how women contribute to the economy in productive and different ways. And we can't really value the work that women do. We can't make it visible for policymakers if research isn't specific to that. So we focus on improved research, especially on the unpaid sort of care sector, on the care economy, because we think that's critical to women. And quite frankly, in this time of COVID, that's come up in stark relief. We're looking at a sort of a recession that's being called a C-session, a term that I don't like, but quite frankly, you know, women work more in service sector jobs, they're dropping out of the workforce more because of these COVID lockdowns, but also because they have additional care activities at home and they face the extra time poverty and burden of time poverty. And we want the research really to focus on women's lived realities. And the third pillar that we focus on is advocacy. We want sort of advocates to use the data, to use the research to really target policymakers for activities that improve women's economic empowerment outcomes, but also women's social outcomes. And here the challenge is a lot of advocates working in the space take a rights-based approach, which they should, but they should also marry it with an economic empowerment approach, because we see this as two sides of the same coin. And so these are the three foundational pillars that we work on, the idea being to build up this base so that we can sort of have this foundational work and help policymakers understand that gender-neutral policies sort of are gender-blind. You really need to be intentional about it to make sure that women are reflected in whatever policy arena that you're working on, whether it's pensions, social protection, financial inclusion. Women are different than men. And if that's not considered at the outset, sort of women get left out. And actually, one of the things that we're doing now, because we're sort of at the 5-year mark of the strategy, is really thinking now, instead of being in the silo, how do we connect it back to other social outcomes for women, sort of looking at social empowerment, looking at community empowerment. And I just want to leave you with the final thought that a lot of women's economic empowerment is measured through social measures, right? So there are very much linkages. And the question for us at Hewlett, and one of the challenges, is really how do we come up with a more holistic framework instead of just narrowly focusing on things like labor force participation? So thank you, Sebastian.